looking for that perfect Christmas gift for the family? Why not a chicken? Stick a bow on top, put the chicken under the tree, and who knows, you may even have a couple eggs to fry up for breakfast Christmas morning. Give the gift that keeps on clucking. A chicken. Okay, maybe it's not the perfect gift for your family, but it is the perfect gift for a poor family in Asia. A chicken can break the cycle of poverty for a poor family. Yes, a chicken. A chicken's eggs provide food and nourishment for a family, and they can sell those eggs at the market for income. When you donate a chicken or any other animal through Gospel for Asia, 100% of what you give goes to the field. And the best gift of all, when Gospel for Asia gives a poor family an animal, it opens the door to the love of Jesus. So give the perfect gift for a family in Asia this Christmas. Give them a chicken. Call 866-WIN-ASIA. Or to see chickens and other animals to donate, go to CritterCampaign.org.
Welcome back to Hope for the Caregiver. I am Peter Rosenberger. This is the show for you as a family caregiver. How are you feeling? How are you doing? He knows the plans that he has for you. That is my wife, Gracie, off of her CD, Resilient. If you want to copy that, go out to hopeforthecaregiver.com. And for whatever's on your heart, you can. There's a donate button there. It goes to this work that we're doing, and it's a tax-deductible gift. Whatever's on your heart, we'll send you a copy of her CD. It's a very good CD. 877-655-6755, 877-655-6755. And John,
yes, sir.
I've got actually one of my all time favorite people in the whole world on the phone.
Hey.
Here with us. It's my cousin, and she's been on the show before. It's been some years ago.
Her name
is Meredith, and I just love her to pieces. She's one of the funniest ladies I know, and her parents, well, your mom has gotten funnier, but your dad was really funny, and
he
was a very funny man, and he was up to the very end, he was still cracking jokes, and I love that about him. But Meredith is a mom of a special needs child, and she has certainly embroiled herself in the world of a caregiver. Is that a good word for you, Meredith? Is that a good way of describing it?
I would agree.
I want you to tell us a little bit about your journey as a caregiver and your daughter, Emma Kate, and then we're going to talk a little bit about something that's incredibly pressing right now for families, particularly families of special needs children. So give us a little bit of backstory on that.
Well, my husband and I have been married for quite a number of years, I guess 23 years now, and we have three awesome kids. And we had a great plan. We were going to have our kids 2 years apart, and we had it all planned out. And we had two boys, and they were perfectly healthy and off now and actually in college. They're 20 and 18 now. And then we had our daughter, and she was 2 years apart too. She's 16. And but she was not according to our plan. She was born with all kinds of brain malformations. They were just congenital, how God chose to design her sweet brain. And she has global malformations in her brain. So that means that she has all kinds of delays. They're not really delays at this point. They're just things that will never develop for her. She is wheelchair bound. She's diapered. She's unable to pick up anything and hold it. You can put something in her hand, but she can't remember it's there. And so, you know, she's knocks things off, but she's articulate, which is our blessing. She is probably, I would say, cognitively maybe a four-year-old around there, but physically she's less than a six-month-old. She's pretty much, if you can, your kid can do it at 4 months, Emma can possibly do it, but that's not even a guarantee. So,
well, you know, did they tell you guys that she would never speak?
They did. They told us when she got diagnosed, she was 4 months old. And we got her diagnosis. I had been pushing for months. I knew something was wrong. She was my third child. She didn't develop normally. She cried all the time. I'm not exaggerating. It was rough. And so actually your parents were very kind to me during that time because we lived in Spartanburg, South Carolina, and your parents were in Anderson, South Carolina. So we saw them a good bit, and they were incredibly encouraging to me and Barry and my kids through that experience of getting a diagnosis. But they told us she would never sit up, she would never talk, she would never, you know, do pretty much anything. They told us to take her home and love her, and that she would live to be about three. And so when we moved to Georgia, she was almost two. So we moved to Georgia planning essentially to bury a child. And that was not something anyone should have to kind of have in your brain, but especially your two-year-old. But God saw differently. She is 16. She has lots of struggles. She has seizures are probably her biggest struggle. But and she's legally blind and she has all kinds of issues, but she's funny. She is witty. She is sarcastic. She's rude. But she has a lot of 16-year-old characteristics.
Basically, she's a lot like your dad.
I mean, I'm telling you, in my middle,
we should have her on the show. You know,
she's defiant. I mean, but she has quite a personality. I remember the day they gave me her diagnosis. My husband was in residency at the time. He was a physician. He was in residency. I was by myself. I had all three kids. And the neurologist came in and he said, you know, I've got a lot of bad news, but I have a little bit of good news. What do you want first? I said, well, give me all the bad news. So he did. And he said, but I got a really neat little good news. And I thought, I mean, after all he had just said, I'm thinking there's no way there's anything good here. And so, I mean, I'm in shock and, you know, processing. And he said, the only part of her brain that looks at all normal, like at all, like just a little bit, is her personality center. And by goodness, that is the truth. The child has a ton of personality and we are so thankful. But she knows us. She knows, you know, what she wants, what she doesn't want. She can tell you what she wants. She can tell you when she's tired. She can tell you, she can't tell you what hurts, but she can tell you that she hurts. So I'm blessed. It's a long road. It's a hard road. It's a lonely road being a parent of a child that requires that much care. It's a very isolating place, but it's got a lot of beauty. My kids are
your kids
really
are wonderful.
Cool. They're
your
really
kids
cool
are wonderful.
Men. My
they
oldest
are.
Is
and they,
involved.
Yeah, they're not boys. They are men, aren't they?
No, they are. They were young and helpful. And my middle child is my dad made over, which is so cool to get
no
to
kid.
See him.
Every time you post a picture of him, I'm like, oh my God.
Billy always says,
that's my Uncle Lee.
That's little Obi. It is. And he's witty like my dad and he's funny like my dad, but he also has the most tender spirit. And so he's in college to become a nurse. And he's been a nurse to his sister essentially for his whole life. And he knows no different. And he doesn't have any resentment towards that role. He has embraced it. He is kind. He actually is applying for a job to be her caretaker. We have a waiver kind of program here in Georgia that kind of allows you to employ somebody. They can't employ family full time, but they're allowing him to work for a short time because my caregiver that helps me occasionally, she's actually pregnant. And so she's going to be out here in a couple of weeks. And so I needed somebody just for a short time. And I asked him, I said, look, is there any way I can let my middle child? And they said, absolutely, because it's a short-term thing, but he's just a neat guy. Neat guy.
He is. And, you know, and that says a lot about you and Barry is that you've raised, because caregiving is a family dynamic.
And
you and your family have certainly, man, you've borne it. And you and I have talked about this. Now, I will say this, Meredith did get to get away one time in a not too distant past and have a little time with some girlfriends of hers, John, and she flew out here to Montana. And, and so I went to go meet her at the airport just because it's my cousin. I hadn't seen my cousin in a while. And I go out there, and all these 40-something-year-old women come off the plane at noon. Meredith was the only one that was able to drive, if you know what I mean.
Uh-huh.
And they all get
they
off the plane.
Fabulous ladies.
Here in Bozeman, Montana. But they get off the plane and a couple of them are yelling out, and here comes my cousin Meredith, who is just, I just adore. I've known her my whole life or her whole life. And she gets off the plane, all these women around her yelling out, where are the Cowboys at? Where they at? You know, and
I'm thinking, no.
Okay. Who are these people?
Is Meredith the mom friend? Is that?
She was kind of the mom friend. I've always been the caretaker of my friends, so I am the mom friend. I got
They kind of needed it that day, didn't they, Meredith?
They did.
But I was so grateful that you were able to get away. And have that experience. And you and Barry have been very good about that sort of thing of pacing yourself, because I know it's been hard. But now that brings me to why I had you on today. We're dealing with, because we're in such uncharted territory of the COVID-19, you can't take Emma Kate to school. I mean, she can't go to school.
She has been out since mid-March. I was telling a friend of mine who also has a special needs child, and she's feeling very overwhelmed, and I was trying to encourage her. But it's very hard sometimes to find encouragement when you've been home. We've been home for, I want to say it's 155 days.
But who's counting? But who's counting?
It's actually my oldest. That's kind of funny, but I'm like, I think you're ready to go back to college. But we've been home 155 days, and if you're a caregiver, it is already an isolating role. You're home a lot. You have to bow out of a lot of invitations or a lot of things that your friends or your peers are doing. You have to kind of think, I don't have childcare for that, or that my daughter can't get a wheelchair into where y'all are going to do, or whatever. You have a lot of things that you kind of have to bow out of. But being, I guess, home for as long as we've been home since mid-March and not having that outlet of school, because that's kind of a great outlet for me to get housework done, or spend a little time having coffee with a friend, or take a class at my church, or just whatever is kind of good for me to do. I don't have that opportunity right now. And at first I was a little resentful, not going to lie, but God has really kind of calmed my heart about that. But encouraging others, it's been a hard place. Our school is going back in September, and that's their goal, is September 8th to start back, and they keep pressuring me to give them an answer. And I'll be honest, I don't quite know what to do with my daughter. School is a great outlet for her, and it's a great outlet for me, but also I have to think of her safety. And there's no guarantee that she would be okay with it. There's no guarantee she wouldn't, but I know that God is sovereign regardless. And it's going to, I'll figure it out, and God will lead me very clearly. And I feel like he's doing that. But being home, it has isolated me even more during this time. And I think special needs parents are very much feeling, it's a lonely place to be right now. As the world has so much chaos, we see the chaos, but we really, more than anything, we just see the four walls of our house. And that sounds very silly to say, but that's how it feels.
No, it doesn't sound silly to say at all.
Four walls. And it's, in the school can reach out and they can do some things, but you can't have, and I'm very blunt, as Peter knows, and I'm so sorry, but you can't have a Zoom call with a class of retarded kids. I mean, you can't. It's not a very, and they try and they work hard to do it, and our teachers are phenomenal. We actually live in Carrollton where we live because our teachers are so fantastic where we are. We interviewed school systems along with Barry interviewing for jobs because we wanted a school system that we felt great about, because Emma will be in school until she turns 22. And so we love our school system, but it's a hard thing. You can't virtually teach kids that are impaired. She can't see it because she doesn't understand.
I was talking to Richard about this.
Crazy.
Talking to my brother Richard about this, and I know that he and Kim and you guys have spent a lot of time together because they have a special needs daughter as well. She's 32 today, as a matter of fact. but it's, and they kind of served as a real source of encouragement to you guys, but now you're doing that for other people. It's really amazing to watch how that just keeps the torch, keeps it in pass. But he said special needs, as hard as it is for families of school age kids right now, which it is very hard. And I'm going to have Richard on the show. We're going to talk about that. Because he's heading up a new virtual education program. I don't know if I told you this, John, but my brother is doctorate in education, and he is taking on a job that starts, I think, tomorrow, where they have 4,000-something students virtually attending school.
We talked about this last week. Because my kids are in distance learning as well, and that's, this came up, and it's just a crazy time for everybody, but especially for caregivers.
Well, one of the things that Richard said, though, as hard as it is for families of normal children, special ed children, it's just brutal. It's a catastrophe. It's like what Meredith's saying. Meredith, you got it. When do you have to make your decision, Bo?
You know, I don't know. I have not really felt pressured. They are pushing me. I think they want me to feel pressured, but I don't, because I just know that, I mean, at the end of the day, she has the right to an education, and it is my job to fight for her right for the best education for her and for our family. And so fighting for that means that even if I decide at the night of September 7th, I feel like I could fight hard enough with good. I mean, I'm a good fighter. I'm not a mean fighter. I am very much a teammate of my school, but I feel like they would respect my decision September 7th, or if I changed my mind September 10th, you know, with classes starting on the 8th, I feel like they would just respect my decision. You know, I've always been a team player with our school, and I'm incredibly supportive of them. And I think in return, they're supportive of me, and they know that this has been a hard decision. We actually went and had I brainstormed for hours trying to come up with a way to keep anything on Emma Kate that would protect her, because we have a mask mandate at our school. You have to wear a mask. And I mean,
she's not going to keep that on.
3-year-old up. And I'm thinking, I mean, she ain't going to keep that on. You know, she can't pick up a piece of food, but by goodness, she can flip a mask off her face in about 1 minute or less. And she also drools really bad. She seizes. And when she has seizures, you see them in her mouth first. So a mask is really just not an option for her. And so we designed a shield that she has a tray that attaches to her wheelchair. And so we designed a shield for her wheelchair that she can then kind of comes up, covers her. So it's more a prompt. I mean, it will help protect others from her germs if she were to have germs and we not know about it, because I would never send her to school if I thought she was sick. But it will also
this could come up and down in front of her on her wheelchair, like on a tray.
You can put it on and take it off. It has her tray has a little lip around the edges of it, and it attaches to that lip. And so it is made of a specific kind of plexiglass. So I wanted it to be where she could see everything going around her, because I think that's still important for her. That's what she's missing, is being at home. She's kind of got to feel like I do, that these four walls and these same, you know, five of us, we're about to go nuts. But I think it'll be good for her if she can get back out and do a couple of errands and, you know, possibly go to school. This will help other people know not to get in her space, because her peers that are mobile, they don't understand that they right now don't need to get in each other's spaces. But her shield gives that subtle prompt that they can't get right in her face. So it's a good design. We actually got it last week, and we love it. She likes it. So we're
did you create
excited.
This?
I created it, and then I didn't have any tools. I have a lot of tools I actually love to build, but I didn't have any tools that cut plexiglass. And so I called a local glass company and asked them if they could assist me. And the very nice man who owns the local store said, absolutely. And he got real excited about it. So he took what I had designed, because I had designed it just to Velcro onto her tray around the lip. But he had.
All right, now, wait, I got to stop for just a second. My cousin is brilliant. She's a Georgia Tech grad, engineering. Was it mechanical engineering?
Or electrical? Industrial engineer.
Industrial engineering.
I'm a numbers girl.
But she also, for her sons, she was the captain or the whatever you want to call it for the robot building club.
Yes. Oh yeah.
She was the coach there for the robot building. I mean, now, and I asked her, I said, are you building those robots that like attack each other? She said, no, that's not what we do. But I really wanted to see
that violates the first law of robotics. All right, come on now.
I wanted to see the robots with the big saw spinning blades, you know, that kind of stuff. And she said, no, that's not what we do. But she's very good
on the weekends, you know,
after class. That's what she does, and so here she is doing something innovative like this. Meredith, don't let somebody steal this idea from you. Make some money off of it.
Well, no, I would, you know, I talked to the store that I went to, our local store. They're great, and they're like, you know, we need to start replicating something like this for others who have the same. I mean, Emma's not the only person in a wheelchair in the city that we live in. We live in a small town, but it's not that small. You know, so people are isolated. If you have like an immune issue, if you're in a wheelchair, you're isolated right now. And it is hard to be isolated for a long time. you can have all the support system in the world of friends and family, but when you see the four walls of your house for 155 days, it's hard. It doesn't matter who you are. And so
have you tested this on her?
Get out. Yes.
Does she respond well?
I have pictures of it. Yes.
Well, I got to go. I didn't see that. I did see that. I'm sorry.
It was just
I did.
The other day. And I love it. And my husband is like, you crack me up. I mean, he's so thankful that, you know, we think outside the box. I think when you're a parent or a caregiver at all, I mean, you learn how to do all kinds of things in weird ways. I can lift her, you know, by myself pretty much wherever I need to get her. And she's almost as tall as I am and weighs almost as much as I do. But you learn how to do all kinds of weird, innovative things because that's survival.
Well,
what are you laughing about?
When I buy shoes for Gracie,
the family comes out. Oh, yeah.
What are you laughing about? We have a weird, innovative family anyway. But when I mm-hmm. buy shoes for Gracie, because it's hard for her to go to the store. I mean, it's just hard. And so yeah. I'll take a foot or her leg to the shoe store. Then I will video conference her with it. I'll make sure I get the right size. Then I'll call her on her phone and say, all right, do you like these? And the store clerks over there, you know, they're just a little bit wide-eyed and they're starting to, you know, kind of freak out and maybe call security. But here's this man out of a trench coat pulls out a leg. You know, it's
not a good look, Peter. Not a good look.
But I've
got to be creative, though. Yes, you have to be creative, and you have to think, you know, beyond what you would normally have to think to make things happen for yourself.
Well, you do, and you and Barry and your whole family have kept such a, you know, amazing sense of togetherness and fortitude and a good sense of humor. You know, that I think that. Let me ask you that: how important to you is that sense of humor, Meredith?
I think it is everything. I think two things. I think first of all, we have to laugh at her, and that sounds terrible, but I mean that in all the right way, is that we have to laugh at some of the stuff she does or that she says or that she, you know, tries to do, and you have to laugh, and it, you know, you can't feel sorry for her. I do feel terrible for her some days, but a lot of times she's just being funny. She's 16, and you have to be able to laugh, and we have to laugh at ourselves, and we have to laugh as a family, and we do. We enjoy it, and we... My kids laugh at her and they make fun of her like she's their sister she is.
Well, Richard,
you know, just because you're impaired does not mean you're exempt from picking at each other.
Well, I watched this with my brother and his two sons, and they pick at Kelsey and Richard picks. I mean, they'd all do. That's how we all grew up. We did that to Tommy. No, my youngest brother. But he wasn't fair. We just did it to him anyway. But it's no. I think you learn. And I've watched this with Gracie, and Gracie's very funny, but not when she doesn't try to be funny in the sense of like I'm going to tell a joke. She can't tell a linear joke. I mean, she just can't do it. But then she will say things that are just so. I tell her, I said, "Baby, you can't talk in a straight line. You can't walk in a straight line." But boy, when she says something that's funny, impromptu with it, it'll stop. I mean, it'll be one of those moments where you just can't help it. There are times like I'm getting mad about something, and we're about ready to have an argument or something, and she'll say something so outrageous that you just can't help yourself. You start laughing, and you realize as caregivers, we've got to have that release of laughter.
Absolutely.
We got plenty of tears. I know you and Barry have had
Absolutely.
Your share of tears like tears. We have. but do we laugh as much?
In my house, I don't watch, and this is so petty and silly, but I don't watch anything serious on TV. I'm not kidding. I don't watch movies that make me cry. I don't watch things that are very drama laden because I just can't. I feel like I have a certain amount of like ability to process hard things, and why would I add someone's made up hard thing to my,
yeah.
my heart.
Ooh, I like
my brain.
That. Stick with
I'll
the documentaries.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
I watch the nature documentaries.
Yeah, yeah.
and I watch historical documentaries and things like that, but there's very few drama movies that I watch. And,
yeah.
And
but if those
Gracie,
historical things make me sad, I'm probably not watching them. And that's,
I get that.
Silly, but it's true. If it's not funny, if it isn't there to make me laugh or to kind of lighten what's going on, I can't.
I watch a lot of Three Stooges.
There you go.
I'm so sorry.
I love it. I watch a lot of things like Friends or Don't Laugh. We watch Impractical Jokers because it makes me laugh.
Oh, that show is outrageous. My sister got me on that. And that show, have you watched that, John?
I have
Impractical
not, no.
Jokers. Oh, do yourself a favor. Yes. It is.
Hey,
those
I mean,
guys,
I pretty much live that life, all right?
So. Those guys are nuts. They are insane.
They are.
It is
funny.
They are funny. It but you got to kind of watch it with a group, you know?
Oh, right on. Okay.
But that's the kind of thing that I wish we had been a little bit more ahead of the time, because my family would have done something like
Y'all
that.
Y'all would have totally done that.
We would have done it. You know, I just appreciate you. I marvel at you guys, and I watch what you do and the encouragement you are to so many. I see your exuberance. I watch how your whole family's engaged, and your sister and her family of what, 17 now? I mean, how many kids does she have?
I think it's 45. No, she has.
They're foster parents, and so they just.
She's a foster and she's adopted, so she has 6 birth children, 2 adopted children, and then an assortment of foster children. Today, I think she has 1. She may only have 1 foster right now. I think 2 have gone home. She had 3, and I think she has 1, but. It'll be any moment she'll call me and say, I had a baby, and she'll have some new kid. But she's amazing. She's amazing.
Well, she's all of you one. Are. And I would like for you to call back when you make your decision.
Oh, okay? Let us know. Decide, huh?
Yeah, and I'd like for you to know what you said. And either way, it doesn't matter. I just want to see how you're coping with it, and then some insights that you could offer to other people. Because, you know, other people are wrestling with this, too, and they may not have as much longevity and insights that you've been able to acquire over a long time of doing this. And I think it would be very important for people to hear that from you.
And there's a lot of guilt related to the decision. There's a lot of guilt. You just feel like you're guilty keeping them home, and you're guilty sending them. If they get sick, then it was your fault for sending them. That's what you tell yourself as a parent, as a caregiver, is it's going to be my fault. And that's a hard place, because it's not my fault. And I know that.
No.
But it doesn't make you feel less of that, because the world thinks that, you know, I stay home. I'm a stay-at-home mom. I do not have a job. So I could keep her home. But keeping her home may not be what the best thing is for her. And that's a hard thing. But I think for me as a parent, trying to not have guilt is challenging.
I got about 2,000 things to say about that, and we're out of time.
Well, I just, Meredith, you have once again demonstrated why you are just such an amazing, I'm just grateful that you're in my family. I really am. This is my
you're
cousin,
awesome.
Meredith
I'm
Harris.
I'm grateful you're in mine.
Well, said no one ever. But, no. But we are out of time. This is Hope for the Caregiver.
Thank
you for being a part of this, Meredith. We want to hear back from you guys and as many times as you want. HopeForTheCaregiver.com. We'll see you next week.
John.
Hey, how's it going?
How you doing, John?
Hey, grand as always.
Do you know that there's a pandemic going on?
You know, I read a couple of stories here and there.
You saw something on Twitter.
Yeah. So. No, I went into Walmart and they said I had to wear a face mask. I'm like, cool, but why?
Hey. Pants are not required, but face masks evidently are in Walmart.
I just thought they were telling me I was a little bit ugly. You know,
it's like Rodney Dangerfield says. They told me I had to wear 2 face masks. But the reason I'm referencing that is because if you know of our work for many years with prosthetic limbs, and we can't go to Ghana right now, and I certainly am not going to take Gracie over there. Mm. We've been going to Ghana for many years to help. Work with amputees over there, but we've been sending supplies and we're sponsoring more patients, but we're not sending teams right now because we just can't. And we've got patients that are lining up that are really needing some quality prosthetic care, and we're contracting out with prosthetic providers there in West Africa, in Ghana, and they're helping these patients that we really are urgently trying to treat, get them up walking. One of them is, and you know, one of the criteria we have with our patients, John, is we target children and working age adults, children, students, and working age adults, and really in that order.
Gotcha.
Because we want to give them a fighting chance to have a productive life with a quality prosthetic limb. This is what Gracie envisioned after, you know, losing her own legs. And it's not that we don't want to help aging or so forth. It's just that that's where our targets are. And lately we've been having a lot of these. Yeah. And we've had a lot of kids. We've had some students that are getting close to their graduation, but they're constantly needing prosthetic adjustments or a new
leg, a new socket, new liners and sleeve, and we're trying to ship things over. We're trying to sponsor things and contract with the workers there to do it. And we could use the help. So I'm asking standingwithhope.com. Would you just take a moment to go out to standingwithhope.com, look at the work we're doing, look what you're seeing, and get involved. And you could certainly write us and ask us any questions about it, but we would love to have your help today. We really need it today for any donation amount. Whatever's on your heart, doesn't matter. We're going to send you a copy of Gracie's CD, and we just want you to know that this is what we're serious about doing. We've been doing this for a long time. We can't go over there in person, but guess what? We could still help them get up and walk, and you can be a part of that today. It's a gift that keeps on walking. I came up with that myself, John.
Oh, yeah, did you? Pretty proud of that.
The gift that keeps on walking.
Like
but it does.
Yeah.
And
it does, yeah,
and with
true.
With Gracie being a double amputee herself, we understand that in our world. In fact, we're dealing with prosthetic stuff right now with her, and because she's constantly needing adjustments and so forth. And so we understand the need, and we're asking you to help with it today. So go to standingwithhope.com today. Thanks so much.